So I hope that is, I hope you are happy with that. If you want to read about the lay, the people to be emulated by lay men, there is a whole chapter of suttas by Citta, there's a whole chapter of Citta, and he's quite an amazing male lay follower, so if you're interested in that, just look up the Citta Samyutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, and there's all kinds of interesting stories about him. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Okay, my son wishes to follow the Sangha way, to be a monk. Yes, we should let him try, but but if he cannot, what if he cannot make it? How to prevent him to not be failing in following the monkhood? Okay, well, it's impossible to know, right? You can never be absolutely sure. And it is, if, even if you do fail as a monastic, it is okay. You have, at least you have tried, you've done your very best. Sometimes when you aspire for something very high, and you fail, that's all right. You're not always going to succeed in everything you do. So, what usually, you recommend somebody who is young, if they want to follow the monkhood, is to finish your education, first of all. So if you fail as a monastic, usually if you fail, it's usually in the first few years of monastic life. Then you still have your education, so you still have something you can do if you go back to lay life again. So this is the first thing, is remember that, you have something to fall back upon. The other thing is that even if you are a monastic only for a short time, you probably learn a large number of things that are incredibly useful for you for the rest of your life, and that will still come in very handy. And it's very likely to give you an advantage, at least if you want to lead a happy life and a contented life, that will be like a ballast to help you do that. But in the end, you cannot ever be absolutely sure. But remember, sometimes in life you need to take risks. If you don't take any risks, you also don't gain anything. Right? It's like if you want to invest on the stock market, if you want to have high return, you have to have high risk, right? High risk and high return always go together. And it's a little bit the same thing with a monastic life. Sometimes you have to risk things, because when there is no risk, there's also not going to be very high return. So you check it out. But sometimes, the best thing to do, I don't know if your son has been at the monastery yet, so often the thing to do is go to the monastery for a while, first of all. Stay there for a few weeks, or perhaps a month or two, get a feel for it, right? And if it feels good and it feels right, then you go take the next step. You stay with Anagarika for a year. So you go slowly, and in this way you can have some idea whether it's going to work out for you or not. Otherwise, if you jump into it too fast, and then that is also not a very good way of doing it. So nothing ventured, nothing gained, right? Sometimes you have to venture things, you have to try things out. And sometimes you turn into the next Ajahn Brahm, right? And it's like a wonderful thing. Somebody like Ajahn Brahm has so much, he lifts up so many people around the world, he gives so much happiness to so many people. His following is absolutely massive. He's like, in places like Sri Lanka, places like Indonesia, places like South Korea, he is like on national TV speaking to millions of people. He is probably in those countries, probably the most famous monk there is, right? And he's also very famous in the West. His books are kind of on the bestseller list in places like Germany. In Germany, this is the national bestseller list. Ajahn Brahm's book was on the third place. Right? It's amazing, isn't it? So it shows you kind of the impact it has. So that's wonderful. And if you can be, you don't even have to be like Ajahn Brahm, but if you can help yourself and you can help others, and like some monastics can do, it's very powerful and a very beautiful thing. So if your son wants to do that, I would urge you to encourage him to at least try it out carefully, then see what happens, and take it one step at a time. Okay. That was the whole question, was it, I think? Yeah? Dear Ajahn Brahmali, is there any meaning or significance to the prefix Maha in Mahamoggallana versus Sariputta? Thank you for illuminating it. Maha means great. So the great Moggallana. So you have a number of monks have Maha in front. You have Mahachunda. Mahachunda was supposed to be a younger brother of Venerable Sariputta. Why is it that some monks are called Maha and others are not? Don't know. I'm not sure about that actually. Maybe they were very, very big, maybe they were very tall or something, maybe that's the reason, right? So he was very, very fat, because the big one, the big Mogalananda. I'm not sure about that. But these days when you see that monks are called Maha, it usually means that they have some kind of qualification, like educational qualification. You may have heard of Ajahn Mahabua, right? Ajahn Mahabua. Maha means that he has finished a certain level of study. That's why it's called Ajahn Mahabua. This is the Thai system. Once you have finished a certain level of study, you get the title Maha. That's in the modern era what it means. Okay. Dear Master Ramali, may I know how young can a child start out to learn meditation? What type of meditation would you recommend? It depends on what you mean by meditation practice. I know that in certain schools in the West, they start off teaching things that are similar to meditation already when kids are very young, and apparently they love it. But you don't call it meditation, right? You don't tell them to watch the breath. What you say, you call it a quiet time, right? And you tell them to do things like envisage the blue sky, a few clouds kind of, you know, passing over, some nice picture in the mind, something like that. And then, so it's slightly different from how you ordinarily teach meditation practice. But it has the same kind of effect. It calms the child down, it makes the child feel more relaxed and more at ease. I would recommend you to maybe search online, just Google on meditation for children or whatever, and you may be able to find some resources online. I'm no expert in that area. I don't really know exactly what's going on. But some people have tried these things out, and there's some things available online. I know that in Australia there have been a lot of ideas about having meditation for children in school, and apparently very successful in Soho. Okay. Okay, how to stop people from taking advantage of you? Your thousand times forgiveness and kindness. So how to stop people from taking advantage of you? Well, remember that being forgiving and being stupid are not the same thing, right? So be wise, be smart. Look after yourself, look after the other person in the right way. It doesn't mean that you allow people to take advantage of you. Sometimes you have to say stop, this, you know, you're crossing the line or whatever. But still, in your heart, you forgive them. Right? So this is the most important thing is what you do inside of your own heart. That is the most important thing. How you deal with the other person, if you feel that they are taking advantage of it, just keep it to yourself that you're forgiving them, right? Don't have to tell it to the other person. Kindness, be kind, but sometimes be kind in the right way. Don't overdo it. Don't do it in such a way that they feel they can take advantage of you. Show that you have principles. Show that there are boundaries, things they can't do, right? And so it's all about balancing wisdom and kindness. You don't want to encourage people to be stupid. Right? And this is what it is about. Like Ajahn Brahm, he is very, very kind-hearted, very soft, very forgiving, but he's also very principled. You try to take advantage of Ajahn Brahm, and you won't be able to do it. Okay, take advantage. If you ask him to give a talk, you can ask him to give endless number of talks, and he will do it. In that way, you can take advantage of him. But you can't take advantage of him in a way whereby his own interest, his own happiness is taken away. That's impossible. Try that and you will feel like there is a barrier you just can't go through. And it should be the same thing with you. You shouldn't allow people to take away your happiness. If you feel that, step back, right? Still forgive in your heart, but don't allow the person to bully you or to kind of order you around. And you can do that. You can be firm. You can be strong in a certain way, strong with kindness. So be wise about these things. There is no contradiction between forgiveness and not being taken advantage of. Okay. What is the purpose of coming back to this world? Is there a coming back to this world? Yeah. Is there a home word written for us to accomplish? Homework. Homework. Is there a home word unwritten for us to accomplish? Oh, probably homework, right? Unwritten for us to accomplish. Okay. What is the purpose of coming back to this world? Okay, I think I see what you're saying here. The answer is, this is a terrible answer about this, right? What is the purpose of coming back to this world? Are you sure there is a purpose? What if there is no purpose, right? That is really scary. Maybe there is absolutely no purpose. You are going around and around, doing all these things for no reason whatsoever. If there is a purpose, it is like as if there is a goal somewhere, something you're moving towards. But the problem is that if you look back into your past life, all you see is you see yourself getting born, dying, doing the same mistake again and again. Now getting reborn in a nice place, now getting reborn in a bad place. And you've done this 1,000 times, right? A 1,000,000 times. Oh no, too much, I can't bear it anymore. When you see in your past life, the problem is that you see there is no purpose. There is no reason for you to get reborn. And that is why you want to get out of this mess, right? This is the whole purpose of it. This is why the end of rebirth is the purpose of the Buddha's teachings. Because you understand, actually, you're not going anywhere at all. But of course, in the meantime, while we get to that point, you have to make the most out of your life. You have to practice to the best of your ability. So what you do in this life, you practice to the best of your ability, you try to understand the teachings of the Buddha as well as you can, and if you do that, you will have a head start in your next life. That is what you should be doing. Make sure that you have the best possible start in your next life. Ideally, you get rid of it altogether. If you can't do that, then at the very least, you will have a head start. So the only purpose really in this life is to make the most out of this path as you possibly can. Use every situation, every opportunity you have in family life, in business life, at work, wherever it is. Use every opportunity to make it part of your spiritual practice. If you do that, then you're doing really well. Then, when you come back in your next life, because you know the Buddha's teachings, when you start reading the suttas or somebody is teaching the suttas or teaching about Buddhism, you will recognize it, right? Wow, something familiar about that. I have always been very surprised at why I'm a monk. why am I a monk? Well, there's no reason why I should be a monk. I was born in Norway. Norway is not Norway, but in Norway. You have to be born somewhere, unfortunately. In a country where there was no Buddhism, right? I didn't have any Buddhist friends, I didn't know anything about Buddhism. And then when I was young, I had this idea, I wanted to go to Asia. Why did I want to go to Asia? Not really sure, maybe just curious, not sure. And when I came to Asia, I went to Japan at that time. I remember reading my first book on Buddhism. I remember going to the Buddhist temples, and there was a kind of feeling of familiarity, right? There's something here that is very powerful. Then when I got back to Norway, one of my best friends, he had a book on meditation practice. So he said to me, read this. I said, okay. That was about breath meditation. It was called the calm technique. It's all about doing breath meditation. Then I had some nice results. Right? And these things started to come together. Then I thought, maybe I should go to a monastery. I don't know where it comes from. Where's it come from? Right? I should go to a monastery. So I went to a monastery. And when I went, I said, maybe I should become a monk. Why does this happen? And I can't explain it. There's no reason why it should happen. The only explanation I have, it must come from a past life somewhere. So because I was probably practicing perhaps reasonably well in the past life, I had laid the foundation already so I could become a monk in this life. And this is exactly the same thing for everybody else. The more firm the foundation is in this life, the more easy it will be for you to follow on in the future. So this is how it goes. There's actually even a sutta about that, but a sutta about everything I told you, a sutta about that as well. It says that if you learn the teachings very well, then when you get reborn in the Deva Loka, you hear a certain Deva reciting the Dhamma. Think, wait a minute, I recognize this, right? And then you come back and you continue your practice because you recognize the suttas. So it's all there in the suttas. Okay, so I hope you are happy without it, perhaps you're not, but anyway, my answer anyway. So. Okay. The Buddha said, after death, we are reborn in the lower world if we are intoxicated with life. It is not just if you're intoxicated, it's also you have to do all the bad things as well, right? You're intoxicated and you do the bad things. If you are intoxicated but you refrain from doing the bad things, then it's not a problem. Is it not possible that during this present occurring lifetime we practice Buddhism as a way of life because of our compassion? But later part of all age we embrace Christianity because God promised his son eternal life in heaven and not in hell. the point is that at the end of the day you can't just grab hold of anything because you won't really believe it, right? You can't just practice Buddhism and then convert to Christianity. It has to come from your heart. You can't just do this as a business deal. There is no heart. There is no heart in these things. It has to come naturally. Now, one of the things that I don't have any faith in many of the Christian ideas. The idea that if all you have to do is to have faith and you convert, and if you have enough faith, you will go to heaven. I don't believe in that kind of stuff at all. And the problem is that, you have to believe in it to be able to have faith. And if you are a committed Buddhist to believe that you are responsible for your own spirituality, your own path, that you have to do acts of kindness, if you really believe that, there's no way that you will be able to convert to Christianity at the end of your life. So just do the right thing. Practice in the right way. You're not going to go to any bad destination if you practice well. If you practice well, you're going to be reborn in a good place and continue, hopefully, your practice from there. Sometimes when you read the sutras, it can look like it's very difficult to get reborn in a good place. But actually, I think that is a misunderstanding of the sutras. It isn't that difficult. If you are a good person, you will generally tend to get reborn in a good destination in the future. Okay. How can we be conditioned now that we will be reborn as a man in a country with no war, like Australia? So how can we do that? As a man, you have to be a man, you can be a woman these days, right? We have nuns monasteries around the world now as well, so you can be, even as a woman, you have a much more opportunity than you had before, so things are changing. So don't be too concerned about being reborn as a man. Just go with the conditions, see where they take you. Sometimes you get reborn as a man and you get very disappointed when you become a man. Wow. So you never know how these things turn out. So basically the best thing to do is just always, just do the right thing. Practice in a good way. Practice in a way where where you do your very best to go as far as possible. And then assume that karma will take its course in the right way when you die. Karma, you do the right thing now. Karma will take you to the best place afterwards. That is the best way of doing it. It doesn't matter if the most important thing is not to get reborn in a place like Australia or even where there is no war or whatever. The most important thing in life and all is who our family is, who our parents are, right? Do we have parents who are open-minded? Do we have parents who are wise and kind of look after us in the right way? This is often the most important thing. And if you do that, and even if you get reborn as a Muslim, if your parents are good parents, it doesn't matter that much. So these are the things that are really important in life. Because if you have been looked after in a good way as a child, you become a solid person as you grow up. If you have bad parents, it can damage you for life as a consequence. So just go with the conditions. Do what is right, do what is good, do all the right things, and then karma will look after the rest. That is really all there is to it, in my opinion. Okay. Bhante, when you reach the state of samadhi, what do you see, feel, hear, taste, and what is in your mind? Thank you. Okay, so when you are in a state of samadhi, right, coming to deep meditation, what actually is that experience like? And What it is like is that as you, the deeper you go into meditation practice, the more simplified everything becomes, right? And this is what you start to see already early on. You can start to see that when you're able to focus on the breath and you're just with the breath, it's almost as if the rest of the world kind of fades away into the background. And all that is left is the breath. It's almost as if your other senses, they're almost gone. Obviously, you don't see very much because your eyes are closed. After a while, you don't feel the body anymore. You don't taste anything. You don't smell anything. You can still hear sounds. But the deeper you go, the sounds also start to fade away gradually. And the more you go into the mind, the less is happening, the more still everything becomes. Your thinking becomes almost completely non-existent, right? And eventually, your mind unifies into a very kind of solid state. And that is where you get into deep samadhi. You get the samadhi nimittas, right? The sun kind of arising in your mind, you focus on that. And eventually, you go even beyond that. Very, very simple state. And the Buddha describes these things very beautiful in the suttas. He says that the first jhana state is a state where there is piti and sukha, so a very powerful sense of happiness, right? And it is stavitaka, stavichara, which means there's a little bit of movement of the mind left there, tiny movement of the mind, not actually thinking, but the mind is just moving a little bit, like there is a, that's probably good enough. Movement of the mind. And mind is very stable, and you stay in that state sometimes for many hours at a time. So you feel happiness, you feel bliss. Don't hear anything, don't taste anything, don't see anything, because you're beyond all of that. Okay, it looks like I might be able to finish all the questions. That's better. If one does not meditate frequently, but does reflection constantly, does it help in the progress in our spiritual development to realize these things as they really are? Yes, if you reflect in the right way, right? It has to be the right kind of reflection. If the reflection is not right, then it may not work. So how do you know if the reflection is right? That is the next obvious question. How do you know if your reflection is right? How you know is if your meditation is improving. Right? If your reflection is right, your meditation should be improving. You should be becoming more calm when you sit down, more peaceful. When you go on a retreat, you have a more deeper state of samadhi as a consequence. That is how you know if your reflection is working. So if you reflect on death, if you reflect on impermanence, if you reflect on whatever it is, it should actually have an effect on you. If it has no effect, then it probably means that it is not really working for you. So you have to be pragmatic, and you have to be honest about these things, and then you will make progress. Okay, dear Azad, there are times we face challenges in life, like tragedy, abusive relationships, loss of life. How can we still stay mindful under such conditions? What is your advice? Don't worry too much about staying mindful. Sometimes it is very hard to stay mindful in such occasions. Sometimes what you have to do is to try to find a way through this. If it is a tragedy, then often all you have to do is to endure, right? Sometimes we may lose a close family member or something like that. Sometimes all you can do is just endure. This is life. Life is like this. Sometimes it throws really big spanners in the wheels and makes a lot of difficulties for us. So you just have to endure and remember this too will pass. It will only last so long. And when you get through it on the other side, because you have been using wisdom, you've been using the Buddhist teachings, you find you have actually grown spiritually as a consequence. This is always the great thing about difficulties in life. If you use the difficulties in a wise way, when you come out of the other end, you find you have actually grown as a consequence. Abusive relationships, well, these kind of things is, generally speaking, if a relationship is really abusive, the best thing to do is just to get out of that relationship, right? And start afresh, live by yourself or something. I know that's sometimes easy to say, it can be difficult to do because of all kinds of pressures and all kinds of things. But sometimes, you know, you find somebody who can counsel you and help you, and then sometimes you can make a break and get out of a difficult relationship. Sometimes we have to look after ourselves in that way, not to have a kind of fiddly compassion for the other person. Sometimes the other person never learns. If you stay in an abusive relationship and you allow the other person to abuse you, they will never learn. Sometimes if you withdraw, perhaps that will actually make that person wake up and understand something is wrong. So use these situations wisely. Go to somebody who you can ask for advice in these situations to help you through. This is one of the great things about having a Buddhist community, right? Like the BGF, they can actually aid you in difficult situations like that. And you can go to somebody you feel, somebody trusted, that you can help you out. And sometimes it isn't possible to stay mindful. Rather than staying mindful, think more about how you can be as wise as possible. Okay, last question for tonight. Dear Ajahn, how do we deal with the people who are always angry and fault-finding with us? Let's say our close family, like a spouse or a parent. Yes, that is very difficult, isn't it, when somebody is always angry and fault-finding. The answer is that many, many possibilities, many ways of dealing with that, right? If somebody is very, very angry and very bad, sometimes maybe you have to leave it, right? Especially if it is a spouse, you have to say, enough, I don't want any more, I've had enough of this. So sometimes we can do that, but it is better, of course, to try to make the relationship work if you can, but sometimes you just have to do something drastic. So what you have to do, the first thing is just to do some of the things that I've been talking about today, and that is to remember that the reason why people are stupid, the reason why they're angry and fault-finding, has nothing to do with you. It has to do with them, right? They have some problem inside of them, and they are acting on that problem. That is why they are this way. So one way of dealing with that, maybe to go with somebody, get some counseling together, right? I don't know if you have some counseling here at the BGM or whatever. So you have a third party present that can talk with all three of you and try to sort out the problems and get to the bottom of this. Sometimes they have to do things like that to sort these things out. But remember that the person is doing this, it's not because of you. So don't blame yourself. They're doing this because of their own demons inside of them. So this is the first thing. The second thing, when you start to see that, you can also start to have a little bit of compassion for them at the same time. Even though they're hurting you a lot, you can have a little bit of compassion because they're actually struggling with something. They are having difficulties inside of themselves. And that is why they're acting this way. So that is also often the beginning to a solution, when you can have a little bit of compassion and understand that they are hurting inside. Because when you understand that they're hurting inside, then you can look for a solution to that hurt. And when you find a solution to their hurt, then your hurt also would probably be resolved at the same time. So these things are very difficult, right? It's very easy for me to say this thing. I don't have a husband, right? I don't have a wife, I should probably say that. I don't have a wife. I do have parents. My parents are generally very, very kind and very, very nice. I haven't really had any problems with them. So I've never really had that kind of a very difficult situation. But everybody has these difficulties to some extent. Sometimes there are people in our life that cross our path who are difficult and hard to deal with. And so we all have that experience to some degree or not. So learning from it is always the best way. And if you learn from it, you grow spiritually, and it is even more powerful. Anyway, these are difficult things, and there is no absolute answer. But as you are trying to find the solution usually will eventually arrive, and you will find the right way of dealing with these things. Okay, I am running out of gas. Okay, maybe we will. Let's just pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha as the last thing we do, and before we do that.